Masters and Creatives to the World Builders Tavern. Today we are talking about the TV show The Good Place. If you have not yet watched this series, consider yourself warned, there will be spoilers. With that, grab an ale, zero proof always available, and pull up a chair. I'm Emma, your friendly barkeep, along with Allison.
Hi.
And Christiana.
Hello.
And we are so happy to have you here. Cheers.
Cheers. What's zero proof?
Non-alcoholic. Everybody is welcome. So if you want a non-alcoholic beer at the tavern, we got you. I don't know why proof is the word for it. That's probably somebody who knows about linguistics or
amount of alcohol in it. So like 70 proof is like 70% alcohol.
Yeah, I was just wondering why like proof is like the word. Like I'm curious as to like where proof came from. But yeah,
we should know this as bartenders and owners of the tavern.
Tavern listeners, we will tell you next time. Or do you know what? Tune into After Hours and we'll Google it.
We'll Google it live.
Oh, already off the rails. All right, well, back to The Good Place. I'll give you a little quick description for anybody who hasn't watched it. So although the plot evolves significantly over the course of the series, which is four seasons long, the initial premise follows Eleanor Shellstrop, a woman welcomed after her death to The Good Place, a highly selective, heaven-like utopian afterlife designed and run by the afterlife architect, Michael, as a reward for her righteous life. She realizes, however, that she was sent there by mistake and must hide her morally imperfect past behavior while trying to become a better, more ethical person, lest they discover her terrible secret and send her to the bad place instead. Dun, dun, dun. This is my favorite show ever. I've watched it like a million times.
Really?
Allie and Christiana, had you seen it before? I know, Christiana, this was your first time watching
this
it,
right?
This
is my first time watching it, yeah.
Yeah?
And I didn't get all the way through. I got until basically the end of season two. So heads up for there. There might be some things, but the big spoiler already happened. So
yes.
Yeah. This is not my first time watching it. I really like it. I don't know if I love it as much as Emma does, but I really enjoy this show.
It's a good one, I think. This is definitely my, like, comfort show. I think I watched it, like, three or four times just during the pandemic when I was like, the world is horrible. I need to watch something where people are being good. So there's some interesting world building in this. So what, Christiana, as a first time viewer, especially, what stuck out to you at the world on your first watch?
I will say I called it on the second episode. So
yeah, that's crazy
spoiler.
To me. Like, good job.
It's secretly the bad place.
I had no idea.
As soon as Eleanor woke up and her dreams were affecting the world, I was like, that doesn't seem like something that would happen in a good place. That seems like something that would happen in a bad place. That's my worst nightmare, is my literal nightmares coming true, right? Like, so immediately, it was kind of like an offhand joke at first. Like, my husband and I were watching it together, and I said, I bet you this is actually the bad place. And I said it kind of jokingly at first, and then like, by the third episode, because everyone's assigned their soulmate in the first season. And I was like, they're the opposites of each other. Like, Tahani talks too much. And Jason Mendoza is pretending to be a monk who took a vow of silence. You know what I mean? Like, I saw these things and I was like, oh, it's so opposites attract in the sense that, but I didn't call the fact that it was to literally torture them. I was like, this is the bad place and they're trying to learn from each other and become better people. And then so that way they could get to the good place was my first assumption. But I did guess it was the bad place within episode two, but for the totally different reasons than what I thought it was going to be. So that was a pleasant surprise.
Nice.
I don't think I saw it coming so quickly.
No.
I can't remember if it was a surprise. But I think it was a surprise, the reveal.
Yeah, I think shocked. I'm so bad at predicting twists, like, ever. Like, I'm just too willing to believe what, like, is being told. I'm like, oh yeah, of course, this is, like, what's going on. I was flabbergasted.
She just sucked so much, too.
I think
it's the thing where I'm like, there's got to be, like, because I always go back to, like, kind of those lessons of, like, storytelling. Like, what is this? Is it man versus man versus God, man versus nature, or whatever? And I was like, for this to be a fulfilling character arc, she has to learn to be a better person. And I feel like she can't do that in the good place. It has to be in the bad place, was like kind of my assumption with it, but it was totally different than what I was expecting. So they got me there. I called the twist early on, but it was a very different reason for the twist than what I thought it was going to be. And also the idea of just like hell being other people, like Sarche. I was like, yeah, okay, you know what, that makes sense actually. Like, that probably would be what my hell would look
it
like.
Would just like, be my neighbors, yeah.
Yeah. It would just be like awkward social situations and like, yeah. Absolutely. So
I do think that that's like, even right there is like a great example of not being dissuaded if your audience knows what the twist is. Like, I think we've seen a lot of times where, especially in TV shows or even like novel series, where the last one hasn't come out yet, and then there's a lot of like fan speculation and people guess the twist, and then suddenly the showrunners or the author are like, well, I can't have them guess the twist, now I've got to do something completely different. And it's usually to the detriment of the story, because it's like, that's not what they had planned in the first place. And it's like, if people guess your twist, A, it's fun. People like to feel smart. Yes, if people guess your twist, like, that's fun. And then also, that you know, like, there's a reason people rewatch and reread things. And it's because things are enjoyable even if you know how they're going to turn out, or even if you think you know how they're going to turn out. Like, so if you're someone making a story and you think that, oh, maybe my twist can be guessed, like, that's fine. Also, it shouldn't be so out of left field that you can't guess it, because then that's just like a deus ex machina and everybody hates that.
No, that's what I really liked that, because then I was watching the entire first season going, oh, that works for my theory and that works against my theory. And like this, and I won't lie, as soon as I was like, this is the bad place, isn't it? Knowing I had to do it for the podcast and I had limited time, I Googled it. I didn't Google why, but I was like, is it actually the bad place? And they were like, yes. And I was like, okay. So I know it's the bad place, but why is it the bad place? Why are they there? Why are they doing these things? Like, are they going to get out of it? Like, there's still so many things that go outside of like that main first like aha moment of Eleanor going, this is the bad place, right? Like, there's so much more around that.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm kind of like a sucker for, I'm never more satisfied in my life than when I call a twist. I'm like, yes, I knew it, kind of thing. So.
Yeah, if the only thing going for your story is like a plot twist, then maybe your story isn't quite strong enough and you need to build some other interest in there. Otherwise, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and even like the twist, you look at twists like The Sixth Sense, where Bruce Willis was dead the whole time. That explains a lot and it's good, but if you
spoilers
find that
out.
Spoilers
for The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, sorry. I feel like it's been out long enough.
That's definitely, if anybody gets mad about that, I'm sorry.
Take it up with your lawyer. That's the kind of twist where it's like, well, if you know it beforehand, it's still a little fun because you're like, oh, wait a second. That's why he's seeing this thing or doing this thing. But it's not as satisfying. Whereas with The Good Place, even if you figured out that it was the bad place, why are they there? Like, what's going on behind the scenes, kind of thing. Like, there's still so much more to uncover.
The characters themselves are so fun to watch. The acting is so good.
Oh, the cast is fantastic. Yeah. It's so good. Did you get to, I don't remember in the second season, is there one in the second season where they're all Janets? Is that episode in the second season?
I think that might be later.
Okay, and like, yeah, because yeah, like, you would know it. There's one where they like all get stuck in a void, and Janet plays the character who plays Janet plays every single character.
Yeah,
and it's so good. Her name is Darcy. I forget what her last name is, or that might be her last name. One of her names is Darcy, but she's fantastic, and she like kills
Darcy
it
that, Carden.
So. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. But the cast is fantastic in this show.
So good.
Yeah. Which I think is kind of like when you're making a movie or a TV show, I feel like the cast is part of your world. Like, that's kind of like the thing is who you choose to play your characters.
So we've talked a few times in After Hours, our patron only episodes, about the three of our fears of death. So I thought this was an interesting show to watch.
Yeah,
because the world building really starts with that question that everyone has on Earth, is what happens when you die?
Yeah.
And just sort of takes it from there and takes it to ridiculous places. Like, there's this point system where you get points, and if you get enough, you get to go to the good place. But I love how they end up figuring out, well, the world is too complicated now. So even if you do a good thing, you might be supporting some terrible organization or something. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, and I think so, yeah, there's one part where there's like, getting your mom flowers used to give you 20 points, but now you're like, there's pesticides and like, yeah, it's child labor. And it's like, so now you actually like lose 8 points if you get your mom flowers because of all of these systems that are like working behind the scenes that you don't
know
about.
Really sad because it's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So I really loved that. And I loved the review where you find out that no one has gotten into the good place for 500 years.
I didn't know that. Okay. Oh, yes. That makes sense.
We're spoiling stuff.
No. Please, yeah. I'm one of the few people in the world who actually kind of likes spoilers. So
that's right. That's so, yeah, they eventually find that out because the world has gotten so complicated, it's just impossible to get enough points. And then they try and figure out how to make a better system. And it's just like, there is no good system for that, like, how to determine what a good person is.
Yeah, so they end up reforming it by, like, you get the chance to earn points or, like, improve in the afterlife. And there's this really poignant line that Michael says. He's like, because they do this thing, the whole thing where, like, they like, run an experiment to see if people can get better in the afterlife and that sort of thing. And he's talking about how people improve when they're given love and support. And so how can you hold it against them when they don't? Oh. And so then the idea becomes, like, in the afterlife, then when you die, you get to go to the afterlife where, you know, there you get all your needs met and everything, and then you have to prove that you can be a good person when you don't have all of these systems working against you.
When you're not fighting for survival.
Yeah.
24/7.
Yeah, which is, I think, really beautiful. And, like, it also, there's one of the funniest parts to me is there's, in season four, when they have other people come to the good place to kind of test out their system, there's this really awful, like, typical rich white guy who's like racist and sexist and everybody hates him, and then they show that like 100 years later he's still going through the process of like trying to be reformed in the afterlife, and like you see a clip of him being like, but what if she really is prettier when she smiles, why can't I tell her that she should? And so it's like, sometimes it takes people a little bit longer to improve, but we'll give them all the time they need and eventually people will get better, and it's great.
The show says so many deep, poignant things. Yeah. Like it's so good. And I have to, like, I don't, did the writer set out to say these things? Or I feel like it was just this story of, well, let's explore what an afterlife might look like and make it funny. And then those beautiful themes maybe came out after.
I don't know. I think it's got to be built in because they are so much about like philosophy and the meaning of life and like even right from the beginning. So I think that that's must be kind of what they started off doing.
See that especially in Tahani's character actually. And this is a little bit world building, a little bit character building, but the fact that she was so motivated to do these good things because she wanted to outshine her sister who always you know, was the favorite and was the most famous, who got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame after her debut album 9 months later, kind of thing, right? Even though that was her, it's like such a philosophical question, truly. Even though that was her motivation, the end net result was good, right? Like, she raised $60 billion for charity.
Yeah.
Does her motivation negate the fact that that fed hungry people or that helped people out of dangerous situations? Like, does her motivation actually change the end result? Mm. No. But does it change her situation? Yes. So it's kind of like, I think that's definitely something that was built into the world building of the series, for sure. Because that is a really intense conversation, especially in the age of social media, right?
So yeah. Yeah, and I think it goes to show that you can write stories that are, like, meaningful and poignant and, like, say something about the world without, like, beating people over the head with it or, like, having to be super serious or anything like that. Like, you, if you want to write something or make a story that's humorous but also says things that are true and important about the world, like, you can have both. And that's part of the humor is built on that. Like, we've talked about, like, Good Omens, which is also humorous. We've talked about humor a few times, and I think a lot of the humor we've talked about has been kind of like really surreal absurdism humor, And this humor is kind of absurd as well. Like Allie pointed out that like it just takes it to the extreme and makes it really silly and goofy. But it's also observational humor. Like it's talking about true things and just highlighting how insane some real life things are. And that's where the humor comes from. So there's lots of different ways to create humor in your world and in your story.
It's interesting that this show is very funny, but also very serious at different times. Particularly the last season, which I'm going to spoil for Christiana and
this is a spoiler-full podcast.
They end up going to the good place.
And does it suck? That's my guess.
It does suck.
It does suck at first. At first it sucks.
Because everything is perfect and people are bored with it, which I find really funny because whenever I try and think of a perfect world, it does feel boring to me. So like I understand because my mind just can't grasp the idea of perfection because I don't think perfection would actually be boring. It's just I can't comprehend it. But anyway, so everyone's bored and they end up making this portal that you can go through whenever you want that will like, I don't know, make you nothing.
It like ends, they realize that people are bored because it's like infinite, so you don't get to enjoy anything because it's like, oh, it's just going to be this forever.
Yeah.
And so as this last season progresses, most of the characters walk through the portal at different times, and it's just very, very sad and heartwarming, and they just... it's that last season just is, I think, more serious than funny most of it, and it is just, I don't know, it made me so sad and also makes you feel good. It's weird.
It's really like heartwarming and just like which is really hard to find in media, which is, I think, is one of the reasons why I love it so much, is it's just like such a specific feeling where it like makes you feel sad but you also feel happy and you feel like it's so like the epitome of like bittersweet. It's like the best. And then it turns out when you go through the portal, because none of them know what's going to happen, they're just like, we know this will end your time here, but we don't know what's next. And so that's what kind of also makes the life in the good place kind of exciting again, is because there is like another adventure. And then you find out that kind of what happens is you go through and then you become like an impulse to do something good. Like you see kind of, they turn into like sparks and then go into the world and you see one like hit somebody and then they do something nice for somebody else. Oh, and it's just like you become the good then that's like in the world. And it's just like,
that's,
oh my goodness.
Pimpling my goose.
Yeah. Like since watching that, I'm like, if there's an afterlife, I want it to be that. Like that is like, I think they've come up with the perfect system. Like that's just so nice.
And watching the last season also brings up my existential dread. It just makes me nervous about like what does happen when I die. I'm just gonna be nothing. Am I gonna go to heaven? Yeah, I don't like it.
I don't want heaven. I just want my consciousness to continue. That's I want to be able to think. I don't know. Throw me into a black hole. As long as I can still ponder things, I'll be okay.
Well, that sounds awful to me. I don't like that.
Actually, the idea of like the good place being boring, part of why I called it is because I think I would feel that way. Like this is such a silly, stupid example, but where I live, the summer from like end of June until like end of September, it's like sunny and 25 degrees every single day. And that sounds like the perfect summer. But after a while, you're like not a cloud in the sky for 5 months. Oh my God, give me something. give me something other than like this.
Perfection,
it's beautiful and it's perfect. But
doesn't
like,
actually,
oh my God.
Perfection doesn't mean the same. Like I think we just can't, like I said, I think we can't wrap our minds around what perfection is.
Yeah, because I mean in reality, perfection doesn't exist, and therefore the thing that like ends it is like change. So then in our minds it's like, well, if it was gonna be perfect, it just have to be the same all the time, because when things change they
and
can
that's
get bad.
A terrifying
and it's like,
concept
yeah
the idea maybe, of every single day being the same for all of eternity. I would
yes yeah like
use
and that
my
sounds
mind
awful
within two earth
but, like,
years
in theory, yeah. in a utopia, it could change and, like, still be good. Like, you would change having the perfect summer day to then having the, like, perfect winter day where there's the fluffy snow and the whole world is quiet and everything is sparkly. And then it, like, changes to the perfect spring day. And it's, like, you could have both dynamism and, and perfection.
Yeah.
Which now we're just talking about, like, existential.
Now we're getting real things.
Let's go a little bit back to the world building. So what are some things about this world that really stuck out to y'all, other than kind of what we've talked about already?
I noted that I think the characters could exist and have the same character growth and relationships in a lot of different worlds. Outside of the what ends up being the bad place, right? Like, they could be, and there is in the second season the idea of the time loop, right? And there's also kind of like, you could have it in any sort of isolation, like they could be stuck on a space station together and forced to learn about each other and all these things. But I think the world really contributes to the humor. Like, the idea of a clam chowder fountain. That's so funny. It's so funny, though, right? Like, so
yeah, or an elephant that speaks truths about the universe.
Yeah, like, I think the characters and the story almost to some extent could exist outside that universe, but the humor couldn't. So much of the humor comes from the world that was built around it. So.
Mm-hmm. I like how Michael at one point is like, what's the most mundane snack that everyone thinks is great, but is only okay? And it's like, frozen yogurt. I love frozen yogurt, so I was very insulted. I thought that was funny.
I was vindicated by the clam chowder being gross because I don't like clam chowder. And I was like, yes, that would be in hell, actually, I think. So.
Yeah. At the beginning of season two, we also got, so in our recent episode where we were talking about The Day After Tomorrow. No, The Edge of Tomorrow, which was the right one.
Not The Day After Tomorrow.
Stop gaslighting me, Emma.
Which Christiana accidentally watched.
And it was bad.
The Edge of Tomorrow. We were talking about montages and how well they're used in the visual format. And they do that really well. The beginning of season two has my absolute favorite episode of the entire series because they do a montage. So essentially, when Eleanor finds out it's the bad place, Michael has to reset it because he's trying to make this is a success. He's like gone out on a limb with his boss. He's like, this is going to work. So he keeps resetting it and like wiping their memories so that he can hopefully have them not figure out it's the bad place. You get this montage of all of the different times that they're in the bad place. And it's so funny and just such a good use of, like, there's one where you just see Chidi run past. He's just yelling, bees! And there's just, like, bees chasing him. And then there's one where they're, like, in a desert with a bunch of cactuses holding, like, a bunch of balloons. And there's, like, a pig there and stuff. Like, it's just, like, this, like, flip through. And I love it. It's just another, like, if you are working in a visual medium, please, for me, just put in a montage. Use a montage. I love a good montage.
I love the one where Jason figures out it's the bad place.
Yeah, and he's like, really? Jason figured it out this time?
This one hurts. For anyone who hasn't watched it, Jason is a very unintelligent character. So he's just like, the fact that he figured it out, Michael's devastated.
That got me good. The one that actually got me in that montage was when there's like the giant, very obvious, ominously glowing obelisk. and then she's like, wait a second, I think this is the bad place. And he's like still kind of shocked. And I'm like, yeah, you put a giant evil glowing obelisk in front of them.
Yeah.
It's, or like, there's black one, and it's like glowing red with all these symbols on it and stuff.
It's like very clearly horrible.
Very there's clearly also one where not good. Yeah.
Eleanor walks into his office as he's recording his notes about the previous set.
Did you say this is the bad place?
Yeah. And he's like, oops, gotta reset it.
Last long.
They also go through like a flip book of like introducing Eleanor to all her different soulmates because she try pairing her with different. It's like, it's your soulmate, a golden retriever. It's your soulmate, this other guy. It's your soulmate, Tahani. And it's just like, it's great to see that. So, please put in a montage.
I feel like you could do it in written form too. It would have to be, there would have to be some like. I feel like there would have to be some sort of editing cleverness in a comic.
Yeah, book, like every time you flip a page visual, or something.
That's like more obvious. But like, if you put just each intro on a page. So every time you flip the page, it's a new reset or something. You could do it.
That's true. Yeah. For all of the, and we could do a whole 8,000 series episodes on the problems with Twilight. But for all of the problems with Twilight, I really like in the novels when Bella goes through her like depression period and it just, it's just like September and you flip the page, it just says October and you flip the page, it says November. Like that, I guess, would be like a month. And I think that
there's clever ways.
I really like that. So you could do something like that.
Yeah,
like,
I've just seen other things like that in books, which is really cool.
Yeah.
I was reading one, I can't remember what it was, where it was like darkness and then you flip the page and the entire page is black.
Ooh.
Which is cool.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. $200 worth of printer ink right there. And so we talked about this a little bit, but I think that this show also does a really good job of putting clues in about the plot and about the world. In the world itself, like, there are clues, like the fact that there's a clam chowder fountain maybe is a hint to you that this is not the good place, like it's not all what it seems. And you don't have to just do that with the characters, which they do, because, you know, Eleanor points out how sort of self-righteous Tahani is, and she's like, why is she in the good place? She's like not that great. But they also do it with the world itself, so your world can give clues about your plot. They don't have to be completely separate.
It's like things. Having a million clown portraits in your house and no stairs to your lifted bedroom kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, in season 3 or 4, she finds that there actually were stairs the whole time. There's just a button for them that she didn't
season
see.
Season 2, Michael literally was like, oh, by the way, that's part of like being the bad place. And then he snaps his fingers and his stairs come out. And I'm like, so you just hate disabled people, Michael?
I mean, the bad place would,
I was like, really?
Speaking of disability, I know, so all of the 4 characters are supposed to be bad people, and I really like how they have their different issues to work out. So Eleanor is selfish and awful person, and Jason is dumb, but it's not his dumbness that is bad, it's that he was a felon and just did terrible things. And
I think they kind of indicate that it's like his impulsivity and like not thinking about the consequences of his actions. Yeah. It's like his bad thing.
And Tahani is vain and jealous.
Mm.
But Chidi is just
anxious. Chidi just has an anxiety disorder.
And I'm like, I don't know if that's fair.
Well, like, to be fair, that is the whole point, is that the point system is not fair. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Although I kind of like... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I mean, his anxiety does... I like how the show shows that he does hurt people with his indecision.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, you know, he could have maybe learned to manage it better, but it's still a mental illness, so I just feel like... weird about that.
I feel the same as someone with an anxiety disorder where I'm like, and maybe this is a controversial statement, but I promise I've been living with this since I was a kid kind of thing. There comes a point where it's like your mental health issues are not your fault, but they are your responsibility to some extent, right? So like if you're letting people down constantly and they're voicing that to you, that's the thing that got me, where there's that scene where his best friend wanted him to be his best man and he put on the whole fake wedding day to see if he could handle it or not kind of and thing, and I'm like, okay, that kind of toes the line a little bit, where it's like it might not be your fault, but you know, you do have,
I mean, it's tough because responsibility. Yeah. Not everyone has the tools or the money or the accessibility to deal with their issues. So I feel like the constant narrative is that, oh, disabled people are burdens.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think this show is saying that. It's just a thought I had while I was watching.
Yeah. I really appreciate that the kind of whole narrative ends up being, people don't succeed when they don't have the tools. Like, that's you know, like, that's the thing. It's like, is Chidi's anxiety, like, in the good place, he still has anxiety, and you see it in some ways, it still hurts him. Like, he has one day where he's allowed to, like, do whatever he wants to. Like, Michael's like, pick your perfect date. And he's so paralyzed with anxiety that he just does nothing because he can't decide what he wants to do. So you see it still, like, hurting him, but it doesn't hurt other people in the same way as we see it sometimes do on Earth. So it is interesting to see that, yeah, like, even something like that, if you're not given the tools to manage it properly, what are you supposed to do, right? Like, there's no other options for you.
Exactly. I think what they did right, though, too, is, like, they didn't maybe my thing with it is less that, like, yeah, you have some responsibility. Like, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility to some extent if you have the supports, if you have what you need. But you also can't, like, hold it against other people if they're, like, if it's super extreme, being like, man, like, you can't be my best man. Like, you did this whole thing. Like, this is really intense. I can't deal with this right now, kind of thing. And I think they did a good job of dealing with that, because I've had that in my life and in my relationships where they're like, you are so anxious and you're so intense that, like, I can't. It's just not working for what I need. And I was like, yep, you know what? That's fair. I get it. I'm a lot and I'm working on it, kind of thing. Yeah. So I think they did a really good job with that too.
I think especially so often in, like, humorous shows, there's a tendency for characters to become two-dimensional. Like, there's the whole thing about, like, flanderization, which is, like, the character that, like, had a quirk at the beginning of the show that just gets exaggerated so much that they're completely different by the end of the show.
Chidi could have become just an anxious puddle of goo.
Yeah, but that didn't happen. And I think part of that is because they did it as, like, a limited series. They were like, no, we have a story we're going to tell. It's going to be 4 seasons, and then we're going to end it. And I love that. I think more shows should do that. But yeah, like, the characters were so robust and they had so many layers that you never felt like they were just a trope or just representing like, you know, one thing about them. It was, well, these are all complicated people in complicated situations and, like, life is complicated, which, as the judge says, that's not a, what did she say? It's like, that's not a moral philosophy. That's a divorced woman's throw pillow, which is so funny. I love her. The judge is fantastic. Who's a great
My controversial opinion is I'm towards the end of the second season. I feel like this could have been 2 seasons.
No, you have to watch seasons 3 and 4. I know, and you'll see why that's.
I haven't seen 3 and 4, but
it could have been. Concept, I think you're right, but
it could have been.
But they have some. There's some important reasons why it's not. Okay. I think there's more story to tell. Yeah. Still, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. Just because the first season, I think they did a good job of, once it started to get slightly boring, where I was like, I get it, the soulmates don't, you know, mesh with each other. Then they dropped the big twist that it's the bad place. And that was the end of the season, kind of thing. They did good with the pacing on that, but I think there could have been 1 or 2 episodes that they collapsed for that one. But
that's fair. Yeah. I remember the first time I watched it, I kind of had the same thought of, like, oh, well, where are they going to go from here? Like, surely this is, like, the story. But I think they did a good job of, like, oh, no, they actually, like, they keep it fresh and there's, like, important kind of stuff that happens. So, yeah. Definitely worth finishing, Christiana, and anybody who's listening to this who hasn't.
I will. Actually, I told my husband, I was like, I need to watch the show for the podcast. And we started watching it together. And he was, like, cracking up the whole time. And I was like, okay, so we're going to keep watching.
We're going to watch the whole thing.
Hello, World Builders. Emma here. Did you know that the World Builders Tavern has a free Discord community for sci-fi and fantasy writers? Get encouragement for that novel you're working on, participate in the monthly flash fiction challenges, and, of course, geek out about world building. Follow the link in the show notes to join.
I think it is time for Proprietor's Pick. So, Allie, what do you got for us? If we love The Good Place, what will we love next?
You might like How to Become the Dark Lord and Die Trying by Janko Wexler. This is coming out next month, May 21, 2024. And here's the synopsis. Davi has done this all before. She's tried to be the hero and take down the all-powerful Dark Lord. 100 times she's rallied humanity and made the final charge, but the time loop always gets her in the end. Sometimes she's killed quickly, sometimes it takes a while, but she's been defeated every time. This time, She's done being the hero and done being stuck in this endless time loop. If the Dark Lord always wins, then maybe that's who she needs to be. It's Davi's turn to play on the winning side.
That is a great premise. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. It sounds
really fun and just kind of, you know, not a direct comparison to the Good Place, but sort of twists on what you would expect. A bit of time looping in there. You know, there's some, I feel like the vibes
kind of reminded me of. Oh, totally. Cool.
So
oh.
I'm really excited about this one. This is on my to-read list.
It's now on my to-read list also.
Yeah.
Tune in next season of the podcast when we talk about all of the books that Allie has recommended this season.
We always say that and then we're like, we have too many books.
Oh, we have too many
books. Too many options. Yeah.
Luckily, for those who like the podcast, we're going to be running it for the next 50 years as we try to get through all of our TBRs.
You can't get rid of us that easy. We'll have many more proprietors.
You're stuck in a time loop with us. Yeah. And with that, we are at last call. So what are some concluding questions and thoughts, things that we can take from the world building of The Good Place and put in our own worlds? Christiana, what do you have for us?
Yeah, I have kind of that idea of like, what does your world add or potentially take away from the characters and the story? So like I mentioned earlier, these specific characters could have had this character growth in another situation, in another kind of world. But I think the humor comes so much from the world and it adds so much to the story and so much to the characters. So it's kind of, you know, a little up in the air, like, yes, you could have this kind of conversation about, you know, fake soulmates being forced together to teach each other a lesson. You could have that in a lot of different environments, but it wouldn't be the same story without the world because The Good Place is just so funny. It lends itself so much to humor. So if you are building a world and you're building a story, what does the world add to it? It doesn't always necessarily have to be the main part of the story, but it could add so much to it, or it could take away from the characters, right? Like if they were in a world where they weren't allowed to talk to each other or go to each other's houses, how would those same characters meet up kind of thing? So really treat the world as like that kind of backdrop to your story and characters sometimes.
Amazing. Allie, what do you think we can take away from The Good Place when world building?
There are so many layers to this show that I feel like it's a bit of a lesson in editing if you're translating this to writing a novel, in that your first draft isn't going to look like this.
No.
But you can slowly add layers through rounds of editing and revisions and preferably getting other eyes on your story. Actually, I made a post on Twitter the other day about how if you're querying, you don't need an editor, like a professional editor. It can help, but you can get by with beta readers and other people looking at your story. If you're self-publishing, I highly recommend an editor at some point.
Yeah.
But just sort of, I don't know, sometimes I get really frustrated reading finished drafts because then I compare my first draft to that, and that's a really bad thing to do because that is not a first draft. Mm. And so you can get really, you know, I struggle with like depression and anxiety, and sometimes I feel that in writing projects, and it can really, you can really be sad and just, oh, I'm never gonna be this good. This book is so good. This show is so good. And it's like, you know, it takes time and layers. Think of your book in layers, and maybe that might help you get over some of those humps if you have similar issues that I do.
Yeah. And not only are those not first drafts, they're likely not even first final drafts. Like often what we're comparing ourselves to are like authors or showrunners who've been doing this for 20 years and, you know, who have written 20 books, and it's like you can't, that's not where you're at, and you don't get to see those.
Often like, it's not even the first book, and you're comparing your own first book
to the latest Brandon Sanderson novel. Yeah, and it's just like, no.
That's not a fair comparison. Yeah. But your brain still goes there when you read it. You're like, this is so good, and I want to write like this, and you can. It just takes a lot of work and time.
Yeah.
and revisions.
Yes. Yeah. Just picture yourself in a real good montage. And, you know, 10 years from now, when you've written your 20 books, you're going to have a montage of all of the words that you wrote. And we will love it because we love a montage.
We do love a montage.
One thing that I would say you can take away from the world building of this is just be inspired that you can create a story around any subject that you're passionate about, and it can be great. Like, this show, if you just, like, it sometimes is a hard sell to people because it's like, it's about the afterlife and, like, moral philosophy, and you're like, how can this be funny? Like, this show references Aristotle more than any other comedy I have ever seen. Like, clearly somebody is passionate about these questions and about, like, philosophy and about morality and what do we owe to each other. And it's like, and you can still make a great comedy out of it, and it's still really interesting, and not just to moral philosophy professors. So if you have a really, like, something you're passionate about, if you're really interested in history or bugs or trees or space, like, put that in your world, put that in your novel. Other people will like it, and you can make it whatever genre you want. If you want to write a funny story about bugs, you can do it. If you want to write a horror story about bugs, you can do that even easier. Like, don't feel limited to a genre or a story based on what your subject matter is. You can, the world is your oyster. So be inspired.
I think my one little, as a communications professional, like, caveat to that is, like, people like learning things, but you do have to explain it in a simple way. Right. And that's one thing I think The Good Place does very well. It doesn't go too heavy into, like, why heaven exists, like, why The Good Place exists or why The Bad Place exists. They just exist. Let's move on. And that's totally okay.
Yeah. And having that's often why you'll have in stories, you'll have a character who is new to a world or to a subject, and you'll have someone else teaching them. Like, in The Good Place, we have Chidi teaching Eleanor about philosophy, and she knows nothing about it, like us, the audience, presumably. So Chidi's breaking it down into really simple steps for her and for us. And so that can be a great way of, making it like that. So there's tricks, tips and tricks to, making it so that your audience can comprehend something that maybe is at a really high level. And unfortunately, this brings us to closing time here at the tavern. We would love to stay longer, but unfortunately these scraps just aren't going to feed themselves to the pigs. Thank you so much for joining us here at the World Builders Tavern. If you just can't bear the thought of waiting 2 whole weeks for another episode, you should join us on Patreon, patreon.com/worldbuilderstavern, for access to our bonus after-hours shows. So you get a whole extra episode of us talking, and it's great. We talk about death and existential crises a lot.
Only a couple times.
Well, yeah, but twice out of, 15 episodes is statistically high.
Yeah, it's a lot,
And granted, after this episode, you know we're talking about death, so. Yeah. You can also connect with us on Twitter at WB Tavern Pod, on TikTok at World Builders Tavern, and on Discord, where we are the World Builders Tavern. We hope to serve you here again soon, but until next time, scram.
Get out of here.